Week we were running through some of the various styles of Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem that are very common in the Gemara. Those that are included in the Braisa that appears in the Siddur, Rabbi Shmuel says there are 13 Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem. Those are not so popular in the Gemara. But last week we went through quite a few that do appear in the Gemara. So I'd like to continue on that theme. The Talmud, in order to the Tanoim and the Amoraim, in order to read in between the lines of the Psukim and the Chumash, have different styles. So another style of a drasha is if you have a letter that's written in a strange fashion. For example, in Chumash Bamidbar, in the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is declaring Pinchas as a Kohen. Originally he wasn't a Kohen, he was declared as a Kohen. He didn't even know his brisi shalom. So the word shalom is spelled shin lamed vav mem, and the letter vav is cracked in the middle. It's supposed to be cracked in the middle. Usually if you have a letter vav that's cracked in the middle, you got to take out another Sefer Torah. Here it's supposed to be cracked in the middle. Half of the vav is written on top of the empty space and the rest on the bottom. So the Talmud explains what that's supposed to indicate. That we read the word as if the vav were missing, and we read it shalem, that a kohen, who is a balmum, who is not shalem, he's not complete, if he does avoid in the Beis HaMikdash, not only is he in violation of an avera, the psukim say anyone who's a kohen, any kohen who's a balmum is not permitted to do avera, not only has he done something wrong, but the korbanos are even possible b'di'evit. And the Gemara learns that din from this spelling of the word, because of the fact that the vav is a cracked vav. There must be a reason why it's cracked. So the Gemara says that's the reason why. Or for example, you have in Parshas Bahaloscha, in the middle of Parshas Bahaloscha, you have the two psukim, Vayim Tzavahor and Vayim Moshe. Then you have Avinucha Yoimar, one next to the other. So before and after those two psukim, you have backwards Nunim Hafuchim. It's not part of the text. It's a separate Nun stuck in over here and a Nun stuck in over there. So the Talmud says that this means something, that this is to separate. We always think that there are Chamisha Chumshei Torah, Reish Yishmos V'yikra Bamid Badvarim, and that's why we call it a Chumash. A Chumash means a Chumash, one-fifth. And the Talmud says that that's not correct. There are really seven Chumashim. The word Chumash is not correct. There are really seven books to the Bible. And Chumash Bamidbar is divided into three. From the beginning of Bamidbar till Vayivin Sohara, then Vayivin Sohara and the two psukim, that constitutes a separate Sefer. Then from the next Nun till the end is the third Sefer. The Gemara says that's what these Nunim Hafuchim indicate, that this constitutes a separate Sefer. What's the significance of declaring that it's a separate sefer? Usually between one sefer and the other, you have four blank lines between Bereishis and Shmos. You have four blank lines between Shmos and Vayikra, between Vayikra and Bamidbar, and so on. You always have four empty lines, but nothing is written. And here, you don't have four empty lines. You have these backwards nuns. What's the significance of declaring that it's a separate sefer if you're not going to have the blank lines anyway? So the Gemara says, no, from here we derive the principle that the smallest sefer has to have at least 85 letters. Pei Hei Oisius, that's a Mishnah. Because these two psukim, Ahim and Sohar, and Avinucha Yoimar, add up together to 85 letters. So the Gemara says, let's say I have a Chumash Bereishis that's written. And so many letters are rubbed out, you only have left 85 letters. So the Gemara learns out from this parsha, Ahim and Sohar, that's the minimum, is 85 Oisius to constitute one sefer. Then the Gemara has also a lot of drushes based on the fact that sometimes words can be spelled mole and sometimes the same word can be spelled chaser. For example, in Chumash it's very common that the word na'aro means a girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half is a na'aro. Up until the age of 12 the girl is called a ketana, and after the age of 12 and a half the girl is called a bogeres. So the word na'ara, describing such a young girl, is usually spelled in Chumash nun ayin resh, and you pronounce it na'ara. And once in a long while, it's spelled nun ayin resh. So the Gemara learns out a din from the fact that it's normally spelled nun ayin resh, and now in one place it's spelled nun ayin resh. So the Gemara says the fact that it's written malay means that she's a full na'ara. All the other cases mean that even an incomplete Nara also has the same status. Incomplete Nara is an allusion to Aktana. Nara is a girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. And Aktana is a girl who's like a boy before Bar Mitzvah is called a cotton. So a girl before Bas Mitzvah is called Aktana. So Aktana means up until the age of 12 is Aktana. That's called an incomplete Nara. So the Gemara learns that it in, that usually when it says Nunayin Reish, and you read it, Nara, it even includes Aktana. with respect to certain dinim. And when it says nun ein reshe, then that din only applies to a girl who already is a full naro. Or, for example, there's a very fascinating book that was written by a German rabbi whom I did not know, all about mole, chaser mole b'tanach. The author's name is Jacobs. He was from Germany, and then he came to America after the war, I think, and he died. That's in Washington, D.C. I'm not familiar with the author. He has a whole book about this. He goes to all of Tanakh, and he shows the way Chazal, in the yeshivas, usually when you study the Gemara, you may not realize this. So he points out the way the Chazal many, many times were making drushes based on the fact that a word is spelled mole or chaser. So he has two that are very striking. In the introduction to the book, there's two that are very striking that people usually don't even think of. And he thinks that this is actually what Chazal were driving at. There was a famous dispute between the tzedukim and the prushim, between the rabbis who carried on the tradition and those who didn't want to follow the Torah Shebaal Peh. During the period of the Second Temple, they had many disputes. And one of them was, didn't come up so often, when you're making a paraduma. How many paradumas were there in the whole history of the world? There were only nine in the past, and there's going to be one when Mashiach comes, going to make another paraduma. But how many did they make during the period of the Second Temple? I don't remember. Two, three, not so many. The Mishnah describes how many paradumas were made. So there was a major dispute every 200 years. There was a major dispute when you're making the paraduma, how tohor, it says in the Chumash, v'hiza ha-tohor al ha-tomei. The one who is making the paraduma, the one who is sprinkling the water, he himself has to be tohor, in order to prepare the paraduma, that he should be able to purify those who are tamei meis. So how tahor does he have to be? So the tzedukim, those who didn't follow the Torah Shebaal Peh, said that he has to be 100% tahor. Even if he went to a mikveh and he didn't yet have hayra shemesh, that's called the tful yom. A person who went, anyone who's tamei anything, a man, a woman, is tamei, a child, anyone is tamei, goes to mikveh 9 o'clock in the morning, has to wait till tzeis ha-kachav. Goes to mikveh 4 in the afternoon, you have to wait till tzeis ha-kachav. If you go to mikveh at night, 9 o'clock at night, you have to wait till tzeis ha-kachav of the next day, of the following day, to be completely tohar with respect to certain din, with respect to eating truma. That's the opening mishnah in brachas, that if a person, a kohen, wants to eat truma, so it's not sufficient that he went to the mikveh, he has to have hayrav shemesh. He has to wait till Tzeis HaKachav following his Tefillah B'mikvah. Or if anybody wants to enter the Beis HaMikdash and they're Tomin, they were Tevel in the Mikvah, they have to wait till Hayrav Shemesh. So the big dispute was, if somebody was Tomin and he went to the Mikvah and he became Tohar and he didn't yet have the Hayrav Shemesh, is he allowed to participate in the making of the Paradum? This was described in the Mishnayos as a big issue. This is unbelievable. If you study Mishnayos and Gemara, this is unbelievable. Hardly ever came up. But the Tzedukim said we wouldn't permit such a person to participate in the Paraduma, and the Chachamim said, no, it's okay. And to emphasize that it's okay, the Mishnah records, Mitamen hoyu ha-koin esarifes ha-para. The koin who would burn the Paraduma, they would shecht it and burn it, and then they would take the ashes and mix it with water, and then that water would be sprinkled on someone who was a Tomei Meis on the fourth day, Hazor Shlishi Shvi, on the third day, and the seventh day, and he would become, and then he had to be Tovel in the Mikvah, and then he would become Tohar. So the Mishnah describes whenever they made a paraduma to demonstrate that we don't follow the opinion of the tzedukim, the chachamim would go out of their way to take a regular kohen, bimitamei him, make him tamei, and then tell him to go to the mikveh, and then insist that the paraduma should be made by the kohen who was a tful yom. Insist on that, to be makel, to demonstrate that that's the din. And because they introduced this kula, it is a kula, you mitami the koyin and then you tell him to go to mikveh. The koyin was tohar all along. Why do you have to be mitami him? No, you mitami the koyin and then you table him in the mikveh and you insist that he should do it. So because of this, in order that people shouldn't think that this is you can be mezalzel in the tahara of the paraduma, so they had to balance it off. So they had to introduce chumras. And they introduced such wild chumras, unbelievable. The Mishnayos described this as maybe two or three times the whole period of the Second Temple. So the Mishnayos described the way they would take pregnant women who would volunteer for this. This was wild. That they should give birth to their baby in a little area that they knew for sure was Tahor. Little area in Yerushalayim. And the baby would be brought up till the age of 7, 8, 9. Only in this little area. They couldn't go out of that area because the other areas in Yerushalayim may be Tomei. An area, let's say 2 blocks by 2 blocks, a tiny little area. And they had to have special Rabbonim for the special cheder for these few kids. The whole thing was so wild. And they would raise the children till the age of 8 or 9, and then they would draw the water, and then they would ride on camels' backs, big camels' backs, on big doors, in order to make sure that everything was tohar. This is all in order to offset the kula that they introduced, in order to demonstrate that we don't follow the tzedukim, that they're wrong. So they used to be mitami the koyin, and tell them to go to mikveh, not have harav shemesh. Is that in order to offset that kula? So they introduced loads of chumras to demonstrate that we have to be machmir on poraduma. So until the age of 8 or 9, they would be brought up in an area that was absolutely tohar, to make sure there's absolutely no tumas meis. I mean, the mother was yoledet, so there was a tumas yoledet, so the mother would be toivel, the baby would be toivel. But they knew for sure there was no tumas meis at all. They made sure that area was a rocky area. They knew that no one was ever buried below. They drilled in the ground till they saw that there was rock, and they knew for sure there were no meisim over there. And then they raised these little children only in this 2x2 area, 2 blocks by 2 blocks, or 3 blocks by a very tiny area, till they reached the age of 8 or 9. They were able to draw water and to ride on horses and so on. So they would ride them on horses or camels' backs, and they would do the drawing of the water for the Poraduma. And they would have this institution going on for years and years, it's 3 centuries or so, just for the 2 or 3 times that they made a paraduma. They'll make everybody meshuggah in order to make the paraduma vitara, in order to offset this kula that they introduced. So where did this kula come from? Maybe the tzedukim are right. How do you know that a kohen who's a tful yom, a kohen who went to the mikveh, who was tameh, went to the mikveh, and he didn't yet have a harav shemesh, he didn't wait till tzeis hakochavim, following his going into the mikveh, how do you know that he's able to do the paraduma? How did the chachamim know that that's so? So the Gemara comments, well, the pasuk says he's a tohar al hatamei. Tohar means anyone who's tohar. How do you know? Maybe the tzedukim are right that tohar means one who's 100% tohar. So it's very unclear in the Gemara. How did the chachamim know that that's so? So this Rabbi Jacobs, after putting out a whole book, so he thinks that the reason is because the word tohar is spelled chasavav, tes hey resh. Normally you would spell tohar tes hey vav resh. Now in modern Hebrew, in the newspapers, they spell everything Molei. They spell Aharon, Aleph, Hey, Reish, Vav, Nun, Moshe, Mem, Vav, Shin, Hey. They spell everything Molei. But this is usually spelled Molei. Tes, Hey, Vav, Reish is normally spelled Molei. And the Chumash spells it Chaser. V'izah HaTohar, Al HaTom is Tes, Hey, Reish. That's what led the Chachamim to Darshan. Tohar means he's incomplete Tohar. He's not a full Tohar. It means that he went to the mikveh and he didn't yet have the Hair of Shemesh. Or you have, for example, another Pasuk. He points this out also. People know this from the Rav Shimon Shkop, was a great, one of the famous Rosh Yeshiva in Europe. He lived in America for a year. He was at Yeshiva University for a year. So he put out his life's work is incorporated in a 2-volume book that's called Shari Yosha. So in the introduction to the Shari Yosha, he quotes a comment that the Tanoim have on the opening Pasuk on Parshas Kedoshim. Kedoshim tihiu ki kodesh ani Hashem Elokeichu. God commands us all to be holy because He is holy and He wants us to imitate His ways. So the Chachamim say, you should be holy. Yochol kamoni, maybe you should be holy in the same way that I'm holy. Talmud Loimer, the Pasuk says, no, ki kodesh ani Hashem lekechem, I'm holier than you. You shouldn't try to be as holy as I am. So what is it referring to? What do you mean we should be holy like God? That's one. That's what Rav Shimon Shkop discusses in the introduction to his book, Shari Yosha. But where did the Tanoim see that it's not the same level of holiness? Whatever that meant, that one might think that one should be holy in the same way that God is holy. How do you see from the Pasuk? It says we should be holy because God is holy. We should go in the ways of God. So maybe we should be holy in the same way that God is holy. Where do you see in the Pasuk, Ki kodesh ani Hashem lekechem, that God's holiness is on a higher level? So the Tanoim don't explain it. So he says it's obvious that the darshaning from the Moli and the Chosin. As you look in every Chumash, the word Kidoshim Tiyu is spelled Kuf Dalet Shin Yud Mem. We would have spelled it Kuf Dalet Vav Shin Yud Mem. Kidoshim. And then it says Kikodesh Ani Hashem Elokechem Kuf Dalet Vav Shin. So the word Kadosh by God is spelled Molei with the Vav. And the word Kidoshim by the human beings is spelled without the Vav. So he says that's what it means. Kadosh, that's Molei, means the higher, the full level of Kedusha. And Kadosh, with respect to the human beings, as Chasa, means an incomplete level of Kedusha, a lower level of Kedusha. And there's a famous, he quotes, there's also a famous comment from the Vilna Gaon, and that's usually when you ask people in yeshivas, do the Tanoim ever darshan a Molei and a Chasa? The fact that the word is sometimes spelled Molei, sometimes spelled Chasa, so they won't quote any of the three that we mentioned, Naro and Nar, and they won't quote Behiz HaTor Al Atomek, they won't quote Kedoshim Yiyu, they'll usually quote the one in Parshas Mishpatim. It says in the Chumash that if anybody digs a ditch in the middle of the street and somebody falls in and breaks his neck, so the one who dug the bore has to pay for the damages because he's responsible for the fact that the other one got hurt. So the word bor means a ditch that you dig in the middle of the street. The word bor is normally spelled beis vav resh. That's the way we would spell it. In that pasuk, the word bor appears three times. Two times it's spelled male, and one time it's spelled chosem. And the Chachamim have a comment about somebody dug a bor 9 tefachim deep, and the other fellow came along and he dug the 10th tefach, and he made it deeper. So we paskin that the one who dug the second tefach is chayv to pay all the damages that occur later on. So the Chachamim figured this out somehow from the pasuk, and it's unclear how they figured it out. So there's a famous comment from the Vilna Gaon, because the first time it says bor is missing a vav, and the second time it says bor is male, so it means the first one who dug the bor dug an incomplete bor. The chiyichre ish bor, if somebody digs a bor, beis reish, incomplete, only 9 tefachim. Then it says bal habor yishalem, bal habor beis vav reish, the one who dug the full bor, means the one who dug the added tefach. So the Vilna Gaon claims that that's what the Tanoim had in mind in the Gemara and Bava Kama, that's how they knew that din, about the 9th tefach and the 10th tefach. But he has a whole sefer. He has a whole sefer about this. All of Tanakh. He goes through all of the 24 books of the Tanakh, the way he shows the Yalkut Shimoni and Gemaris and Midrashim and Tanoim and Rishonim. And everybody has comments on this, the fact that sometimes words are spelled Malay, and sometimes words are spelled Chosim. There's another big issue that the Talmud speaks about. Sometimes you have, on several occasions, you have a Kriya Ksiv. You have a word that's spelled one way, and you read it differently from the way it's spelled. Sometimes you have a kri veloksiv. Sometimes the word doesn't even appear at all. In Megillah Asrus, sometimes you have words that don't appear at all, and the tradition has it that you have to, when you read the Megillah Asrus, you have to add on a word. And also in Megillah Asrus, you have words that are written that you don't read. It's ksiv velokri. You have kri veloksiv. That's very unusual. But what you have often is a kri oksiv. It's written one way, and you pronounce the word differently. Sometimes you substitute a totally different word instead, and sometimes you read it slightly differently from the way it's spelled. So the Radak writes in one place that the idea behind these Kriya Ksiv is that in the days of Ezra, when they were collecting and putting together all the Kisvei HaKodesh, all the Tanakh, and they were canonizing, they were determining which Svarim should be included, which not, so they had different versions of these different Svarim, and sometimes they had, on a given Pasuk, they had two spellings of a word, so they decided to put one in the Ksiv and one in the Kri. They're going to write it one way, they're going to read it the other way. That's not what it says in the Talmud. That's a famous Radak, but that's not what it says in the Gemara. The Radak, very surprisingly, the Radak for a living used to teach Talmud. Everybody thinks they must have taught Tanakh. No, he taught the Gemara. That was his parnasa. And very often he has things that contradict Gemara. So this is a very strange comment because the Gemara makes a big fuss about this. The Gemara says that the Kriya Ksiv is a halacha l'moshe misinai. The tradition has it that the word has to be spelled one way. It has to be pronounced another way. It's not that it doesn't represent two different versions of the same pasuk, and they weren't sure which is the correct version, so they decided they'll leave one in the text and they'll read it differently, and they'll be yotzei both. The Gemara says not so, and that's why the Tanoim had a major dispute. What do you do when you have a kriya ksiv and you have a discrepancy between them? Let's say in a halachic issue, you have a pasuk and it says one way, one thing, and then the halacha l'moshe misinai says you have to read a word differently. For example, in Parshas Vayikra, this is an obscure example, but for those who are familiar with Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, this is a very important issue. It starts off as obscure, but it turns out it develops to be a very important issue. There is an institution of Asham Tolui. Asham Tolui means, let's say, a person was Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg. So the Torah requires that he should offer a Korban Chatas as a kapara for atonement. What if the person is not sure if he is Mechal Shabbos? Let's say he did the Malacha, his watch stopped, and he thinks that he did the Malacha during Bein Hashmashes. He's not sure whether it was Shabbos or it wasn't Shabbos. So you can't bring a Korban Chatas because maybe a Korban Chatas cannot be offered, you cannot volunteer a Korban Chatas, not like an Ola or a Shlomim, which you can volunteer. A Korban Chatas, either you're obligated to bring it, then you bring it, or if you're not obligated, you're not permitted to bring it, and it's a violation of bringing chulim ba'azara, which you're not allowed to bring. You're not allowed to shecht an animal which is not a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. So the korban chatos is either you're obligated or you're not allowed to bring it. So what if the person has a doubt, he has a suffix, whether he was mechal Shabbos or not? So the Chumash says, one who does achas mikol mitzvah Hashem, shalosei asenu, and he's not sure if he violated it, he brings an oshem tolui. Tolui means he's not sure. Suffix. The word tolui means suffix. So the Chumash writes, Mem Tzadik Vav Tov, Mitzvahs, and the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai says that you're supposed to read it Mitzvos. Now, Mitzvos, that's a problem. Mitzvos we spell also Mem Tzadik Vav Tov. We don't spell it Mem Tzadik Vav Vav Tov. But the Talmud treats that as if it were a Kriya Ksiv. The Ksiv is Mitzvahs, and the Kriya is Mitzvos, as if it were spelled Mem Tzadik Vav Vav Tov. So the Gemara says, the Gemara has a debate, a dispute among the Tanoim, how do you paskin Halacha L'Maisa? When you determine the details of the din of Oshem Talui, do you paskin according to the Ksiv, Mitzvahs, or do you paskin according to the Kri, Mitzvos? And the Talmud has, it's an obscure case with an obscure difference, but after you study the whole passage in the Talmud, it comes out to be a very major issue regarding the whole institution of Safek Deraisa Luchum. Everything rests on that pasuk. What's the nature of the din of Safek Deraisa Luchum? So the Tanoim had a dispute which appears in many places, in many areas of Halacha. Do you say Yeshem La Mikro or Yeshem La Masoris? The Mikro is the Kri and the Masoris is the Masoretic text, the Ksiv. Whenever there's a discrepancy, whenever there's a contradiction, whenever you have a Kri Ksiv and there's a contradiction between, if you'll determine the Halacha according to the Ksiv, the din will be one way. If you determine the Halacha according to the Kri, it'll be a different way. So do you pass him like the Ksiv or do you pass him like the Kri? There must be a reason why the Rabban Shalom gave a Kri and a Ksiv. But the question, okay, so there's a reason. So which one was intended to be Halacha L'maisa and which one was intended to teach some other moral, ethical, or religious principle or Hashkafa or something? So that's a major dispute among the Tanoim. Tosis points out, this you find in the Gemara every so often, Tosis points out, if you study Sanhedrin, Dav Dalet, the Gemara has quite a few cases of Kri Uksiv. The Gemara has a lot over there. But then it's scattered about all over the Talmud, whether you say Yeshem La Mikro or Yeshem La Masoris, but you follow the Kri or the Ksiv. So Tosis on Sanhedrin, Dav Dalet points out, whenever it's possible to blend together the Kri and the Ksiv and to come up with a din that includes both, encompasses both, so then, matov, that's the best thing. If you can figure out how the halacha should follow both the kri and the ksiv, there shouldn't be a contradiction. That's the best thing. For example, it says in the Chumash that the men have an obligation to visit the Beis HaMikdash on the Sholosh Regolim, on Pesach Shavuot Sukkah. Sholosh Pam Roshana Yeroi Kol Zuchurcha, Espenei Hashem Elokecha. You have to visit the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara treats the word Yeroi as if it's a kri ksiv. It's also problematic. Yeroi, Yud Reish Aleph Hei. So the ksiv, the Gemara says, is Yireh. Yira. We should see God. Yira calls Chorchas Panei Hashem. The men should go and see God. And the Kri is Yera'eh. We should appear in the presence of God. We would have spelled it the same way. Yera'eh is spelled the same way. In modern Hebrew, in the Israeli newspapers, they would spell Yera'eh Yud Yud Reish Aleph Hei in order to read it. But that's incorrect spelling. That's not correct spelling. So the Talmud treats that pasuk as if that's a Kri Yaksiv. So, and then the Gemara says, well, over there, there's no problem. We pass them both together. Yira yiroi, kederach shel bo, liras kach bo leiroz. We pass them both. That every man who goes to be Ola Regal to visit the Beis HaMikdash comes to be seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can he see HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He can't see God. So the Talmud says that on Sholosh Regolim, they used to pick up the Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash. Shulchan sat there all year long with the Lechem upon him, with the 12 chalas on it. And when the people came to be Ola Regal, they used to pick up the Shulchan, like this. They used to squeeze the Lechem upon him to show everybody a miracle, that even though the Lechem upon him was baked on Friday, and it sat there a whole week, and they took it off next Shabbos, and they ate it Shabbos, and Malav HaMalka, Matzoi Shabbos, it was just as fresh, Lechem Cham Ki Yom Hilokcho, the Pasuk says in Sefer Shmuel, it was just as fresh as it was the day that it was baked on Friday the week before. So they would demonstrate to the people this ness, that the Lechem upon him was fresh. Or there would be another thing that the Talmud says that they would demonstrate. They would, the Gemara says, during the first temple, the parochus was a wall. There was a wall that was an amma thick, so thick, concrete wall. But there were curtains in the wall. So the Talmud says, in the second temple, the rolly curtains, there was no wall separating. In the first temple, there was a big concrete wall with curtains. So they would roll up the curtains when the people would come to be Ola Regal, they would roll up the curtains, and they would show the people, the Kruvim, hugging each other. The Kruvim are on top of the Aron, hugging each other. Kimar Ishvi Levyosa, like a husband hugs his wife. That's a pasuk in Divrei Hayom, that the Kruvim, one was male, one was female, were hugging each other to demonstrate the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for the Jewish people. So this is in order to fulfill Yireh Kol Zuchurcha, that we should come to the Beis HaMikdash to see something special. we would see the lechem aponim. They would demonstrate the lechem aponim was fresh, and they would show everybody the kruvim hugging each other. And of course, we have to appear in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara understood also that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to see us with his two eyes, whatever that means, that's got to figure out what that means, so too we should come to see God with our two eyes. And the Talmud understands that one who's blind in one eye, or blind in both eyes for sure, is not obligated to fulfill this mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Asuma Beino Achas, one who's blind in one eye, is exempt from this mitzvah of Yirias Panim, because we say, Yireh Yeroh, Kederach Shebol Liros, Kach Bol Eroh, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to see us with his two eyes. The Medrash explains what that means, no time now. So too, we should come to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our two eyes. So this is a big topic in the Talmud. How do you deal with the Kriya Ksiv? When you have a pasuk, where you have a word in the pasuk that either is written one way and it's read totally differently, or one could have read it differently, but we read it according to the tradition, the correct way, according to the Kriya. So how do you deal with the Mikra and the Masorah? So that's a dispute among the Tanaim, whether you follow Halacha L'maisa, when there's a contradiction. Whenever you can blend them, both the Kriya and the Ksiv together, you do so, as this Pasuk Yireh Yeroah. Whenever it cannot, usually cannot blend in together, so then it's a major dispute among the Tanaim, whether we follow the Yesh Eim LaMikra, do we follow the Mikra, or do we follow Yesh Eim LaMasorah? There's a discussion in the Tshuvas HaGaon, and why did the Tanaim use the expression mother, Yesh Eim LaMikra? Is the mother of all of the halachas based on the Ksi or Kri, or is the mother of all halachas based on the Ksi? Why didn't they say the father? The Gemara has an expression, binyan av. They don't call it a binyan aim. So how come over here it's the father and here it's the mother? So there's a whole essay in the Tshuvas HaGaon, and we don't know exactly what they answered. But the question was posed and they had a discussion on it. Another one in the Midrash HaTorah and Drash Hashem, which is the most popular midah used in the Talmud, is what we call in the Yeshivas, in the Talmud, Ma Matzino. Ma Matzino means like this. There's a question among the Rishonim, which one of the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah and Drash Hashem is the Ma Matzino? See, all the other midahs that we were speaking of so far were not included at all in Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah and Drash Hashem of Rabbi Shmuel and the Braisa that appears before Baruch Shammah and the Siddur. But the midah of Ma Matzino is assumed that it is among those that are mentioned in the Braisa, but that phrase doesn't appear. So some Rishonim are of the opinion that Ma Matzino is included in the midah of Binyan Av, that the word Binyan Av means that the word that appears in Chumash in different places has the same connotation, and also that all halachas fit into one pattern. That's what a Ma Matzino means. And other Rishonim insist not, so they say no, that a Ma Matzino is included in the midah of Kal V'chomer. Kal V'chomer means if the din in this case is so certainly more so the din in the other case should certainly be like that. So a Ma Matzino is the same as a Kal V'chomer, but without the twist. Not that it's certainly more so the same. If the din in the Chumash over here is like this, and the other cases is practically identical with this, is so similar, so the din in the other case is also going to be the same. So the premise of a Ma Matzino is that we assume, as the expression appears in the Tosefta, Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad. It's a very interesting Tosefta. The Tosefta says when the Rebbe is giving a shiur, so the students have a right to ask, with reason, within reason. So if a student, what if a student asks the question that has nothing to do with the lecture? Let's say the Rebbe is giving a shiur on Hilchos Chanukah and the student all of a sudden pops up, raising his hand, he has a question of tefillin. Has nothing to do with the topic that's being discussed. So the Rebbe tells him, I'm not discussing that now. We'll talk about that some other occasion. So the Tosefta says the student has to apologize in public and say, I apologize, Shaloi ki inyan shalti. And Rav Meir disagrees, and the Tosefta in Sanhedrin, he says, no, Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad. Everything is interrelated. It looks like there's no connection between Tefillin and Chanukah, but if you think for a couple of minutes, you'll probably find a connection. Everything in Halacha is interconnected. We assume that the statement of Rav Meir is correct, that everything in Halacha is interconnected, but still the student has to apologize, because on the surface level, there's no connection and he's disrupting the lecture. So this principle, Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad, is the premise of the midah of Ma Matzino. Whenever you have a din of Chumash, you assume that that din doesn't only apply in that particular instance, it applies in any case that's similar. For example, it says in the Chumash that when Moshe Rabbeinu made the Mishkan, so he used Atzei Shitim Omdim. What does it mean, Omdim? He took the trees and they chopped them down. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do the chopping, they chopped down the trees and they put the trees, they made boards from the trees according to a special dimension. And the boards were standing upright. The boards were not sideways, and the boards were not upside down. The boards were this upright, the same way they grew on the tree. That's what it means, Atzei Shitim Omdim, Omdim Keder Kedilosa. That pasuk is only written in Chumash in connection with the crushim of the Mishkan, the boards of the Mishkan. So the Talmud understands based on that pasuk that whenever you use any natural object, anything that grows from the ground, for a mitzvah, you have to hold it kederach kedilos. I mean, that's how we know that you have to hold it, pit them up. What does the esrog have to do with the Mishkan? The rule is, whenever you want to fulfill, we extrapolate from that pasuk. The pasuk is only speaking about the kroshim of the Mishkan. But the Gemara says, whenever you happen to be using a natural item, let's say you make an Aron Kodesh, you make pews for a shul, you make it from wood, so you could have made it from marble. There's no halacha that says you have to use wood, so there's no problem if wood is sideways. But whenever you use some wood, where the halacha requires that it has to be wood, it has to be some vegetable or fruit, it has to be something that grew from the ground, and the halacha requires that it has to be used in the same way that it grew from the ground. That's called the mamatzina. The pasuk only appears in Chumash in connection with the Mishkan. And from that pasuk on the Mishkan, we derive to all other instances where you're using some natural object to perform a mitzvah. Well, for example, those who may be familiar with the opening Mishnah in Bava Kamma, the Mishnah in Bava Kamma lists off all the categories of damages that are mentioned in Chumash. Let's say in Parshas Mishpatim, in Chumash Mos, that says if I have an animal and the animal causes damage with its horn, so there's one din, that's keren. If the animal causes damage by walking, there's another din. If the animal causes damage by nibbling, eating someone else's food, there's a third din. If I dig a ditch in the middle of the street, that's a fourth din. If I'm negligent and I had a barbecue and the fire goes out and it burns down the neighbor's house, that's a fifth din. If a person makes damage, that's a sixth din. Different avos nezikin, different categories of damages that are caused. So then the Mishnah and the Gemara say, these are only examples. What it says in the Chumash is only an example. You can have a case that's not described at all in Chumash, and it's still going to have the same din, that the one who's responsible for the damage will have to pay the same amounts, either Chatzi Nezek or Nezek Sholem. All the dinim are going to be the same if the case is sufficiently similar to that case that's described in the Chumash. That's called the Mamotzinu. Those are called Toldos. What appears in the Chumash, that's called the Obis Nezikin. And the cases that are not described by the Chumash but are sufficiently similar are called toldos. And toldos same kayetzah behem. The din is that you pay, the one is responsible for the damages, pays exactly the same amount, even in the case that's not described by the Chumash, because it's sufficiently similar to the case that is described, that we should say that the dinim are exactly the same. Now the Gemara has two limitations on this. We said you learn out from the Mishkan to the Esrig that you have to hold the pit them up. You learn out from the Mishkan. Or you learn out from the case described, Karen, Shem Beregel, by the animal making damage. You learn out to all kinds of other cases, even though they look pretty remote. The Chachamim have to determine that that's sufficiently similar. So the Gemara has two limitations. One is, one principle the Gemara has, Iser mituma loy alfino. If there's a pasuk in Chumash with respect to Tuma Vetara, so you cannot derive from Tuma Vetara to the area of Isa Veheta. And number two, Isura Mimamayna Loy Alfino. You cannot derive, if the pasuk says something about Isa Veheta, you cannot derive from that to extrapolate, to say the din would be the same, even in the case of Dini Mamina. So what the Talmud is saying, in effect, is that the halacha is divided into three categories. You have one category is Tuma Vetara. One category is Isa Veheter, and the third category is Dini Mamanis. And in each category, all the laws fit into one big pattern. Everything creates one big mosaic, and everything has to fit in. And if you have a din in one place, you don't say, oh, that's a separate din over there. It's not a separate din. Because we try to figure out what the pattern is, so we extrapolate from that din to all other dinim that are sufficiently similar. And you say, everything in Dini Mamanis has to fit into one pattern. Everything in Tuma Vatara has to fit into one pattern. And everything in Issa Veheta has to fit into one pattern. But you cannot derive a din from one category to the other, because there's not one overall pattern. There are three separate patterns. This is the comment that's made by the Vilna Goyen. There's a Sefer Aderes Elio that's written by the students of the Vilna Goyen. Most of the Svarma of the Vilna Goyen are written by the students. There's very little. He only wrote on the Kabbalah. The things that we can't even read one line over there. We don't even understand anything. That was written by the Vilna Goyen himself. And all the popular works that have things quoted from the Vilna Goyen were written by the students. So the one of the students who wrote Aderes Elio on Parsha Shoftim, on Chumash Dvarim, writes, Ki poli mimcha dovel amishpat, it says, when you don't know what the din is, bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega, when you have a suffix what the din is, and divrei rivets bisharecha, it's a dispute among the Talmid HaChamim in your city, so you should go to the Bez Nagodol in Yerushalayim and ask them. And whenever the Sanhedrin paskins is binding on all of the Rabbanim, and no one is permitted to paskin against the psak of the Bez Nagodol. As long as he didn't ask the Shaila of the Bez Nagodol, each rabbi is entitled to maintain his own opinion. And once the Shaila is asked of the Bez Nagodol, so everyone has to fall in line and follow the psak of the Bez Nagodol. So the Chumash gives three examples. Ki palei mimcha dovel amishpot, when a din will be mechusa mimcha, ki palei mufla, you won't know what the din is, bein dam le dam, bein din le din, Nega la nega. So the Vilna Gaon is quoted in Aderes Aliyah was saying that Kan and this pasuk Kidla HaTorah, the Torah included, Kol Gimel Chelke HaHalacha. There are three areas of Halacha. Bein Dam Lada means Isa Veheta, whether the woman is a Nida or not. Bein Din Ladin is Dini Mominis. And Bein Nega La Nega is Nega Tzaras, that's Tuma Vetar. It's interesting that the Vilna Gaon says Bein Dam Lada, that whether the woman is a Nida or not, that's called Isa Veheta. Rav Yosef Engel, who died about 90 years ago. He was a Rav in Krakow, in Poland. He was a famous Goyen. He wrote quite a few Svarim. He wrote one of his many Svarim is Asvan de Arais Osios HaTorah. So Asvan de Arais, he has an essay where he speaks about the famous comment of the Kuzari. The Kuzari is a book by Rabbi Yudah Halevi, who is a student of the Rif, who wrote a lot of poetry. He wrote some of the kinnas that we say, he wrote some of the slichas that we say in davening. And he wrote the Sefer HaKuzari, which is a historical novel. It's based on a real chunk of history, that there was a Goyish king who kept on having a recurrent dream that his kavanoscha ritsuyo, your intentions are very fine, very spiritual. You're worshipping the wrong religion. You're worshipping Avodah Zarah. You want to be spiritual, but you're on Avodah Zarah. You're over Avodah Zarah. You should find out what the true religion is. So Rabbi Yudah Halevi, the story goes that he converted to Judaism, and he eventually got all the people in his kingdom to convert also. So Rabbi Yudah Halevi has a whole historical novel where he first invited a representative of the Muslim religion and a representative of the Catholic religion to appear before him. He thought the Jewish religion is out of the question. The Jews are downtrodden. And then he decided, well, may as well invite a rabbi also. And then, as it turns out, he was taken by the rabbi, and he felt that the Jewish religion is a true religion, and he has a whole historical novel, the way he has a whole conversation between the melech and the chover, between the rabbi and the king. He's asking questions about the Jewish religion, about the Torah, how come you do this, why don't you do this, why do you do that? Very fascinating. So among the many questions that he asks is, how come you don't observe the laws of Tumah V'Tahara? People are tomei, no one's going to the mikveh. So the rabbi says, well, we're not eating any truma, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't eat any karbonas, and we don't have any Maisa Sheni. So the whole thing, we live so far away from Eretz Yisrael, we live so far away from the Beis HaMikdash, so all the laws of Tuma Vitara are irrelevant. So then the king asks, but why do the women go to mikveh, if the laws of Tuma Vitara are irrelevant? So he says, no, that has nothing to do with Tuma Vitara. The laws of Nidah, that's Issa V'Heter, totally unrelated with there is a din that a woman who's a Nidah is an Av HaTuma, that's one din. But the halacha that the need is asur l'bayil is totally unrelated. So this is a famous comment that the Kuzari has, which is discussed by the later poskim. So the Rabbi Yosef Engel points out that the way the Vilna Gaon reads the pasuk in the Chumash, that's what it says explicitly. The Chumash is depicting the three categories of halacha, bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega. So nega lenega means tumas tzaraas. So that's tumah v'tahara. Din ledin is din imamanis, that's mamoina. And the third category is supposed to be isa v'heter. And the Chumash, instead of talking about basa v'cholav, a Shabbos, a kashrus, or something, talks about taras hamishpacha, bein dam ledam. So you see, the nida lebailo is an issue of isa v'heter. It's really not a topic of tumah v'tahara. The tumah v'tahara aspect is totally unrelated to the aspect of nida lebailo. So this is a fundamental principle that appears in the Gemara every so often, that we assume all the dinim within one area, all the laws within the area of Issa V'Heter blend in. That's why you can learn out from the Kroshim of the Mishkan to the Pittim of the Esrei. That has to be Kedarik D'Ilosim. Everything in Orachaim and in Yeridaya and in Ebenezer blend in together. In Achayishim Mishpat, that's dinim Amunis, everything blends in together. In Tumah V'Tahara, everything blends in to make one big mosaic. And that's why you can learn out. The Gemara has another three categories of halacha. These are the three major categories. Then the Gemara says that there is a slight difference regarding the Midrash HaTorah and Rashi's Bem in the area of Kachim. When it comes to laws of Karbonas, so the Midrash HaTorah and Rashi's Bem are slightly different. There are several differences that the Gemara mentions. So that's why Kachim is a separate area of halacha. Kachim, you can't always learn out all the dinim of Kachim from the rest of Issa V'Heter because the Midrash HaTorah and Esh Hashpem are really slightly different. Similarly, the Gemara has a pasuk to indicate that the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem are slightly different in another two areas. One is Din in the Nefashos, when the Bezin has to determine whether somebody is Chayv Misa or not. And one is in Avodah Zarah. In the area of Avodah Zarah, you have to go Lechumra a little bit, slightly Lechumra. Whenever there's a toss-up, had a darshan, a midah, had a darshan, the drushes. So you always, if it's a slight toss-up, you go Lechumra. And in Din and Nefashos, whenever there's a toss-up, you always go Lekula. Because in Din and Nefashos, the Pasuk says, V'hitzilahu Eidah, that the Bezin should always try to be Mahapach B'schusai, to acquit the person whenever possible. And in Avodah Zarah, the Pasuk says just to be verse, Shaketz to Shaktsena v'Saev to Saveina k'cherem hu. Pasuk implies that we always have to go l'chumra a little bit. So just as a side point, we would have understood very well if there would have been Shisha Sidrei Mishnah corresponding to the Mishnayis is divided into six areas of the Mishnayis would have corresponded to this. One would have been Nezikin, which it is, and one would have been Kachim, which it is, and one would be all of Isra Heter. And one would have been Taris. Taris is a separate area in Halacha, that's Tum of Atara. Kachim is a separate area because the Midrash HaTorah and Rashi's Behem and Kachim are different. And Nezikin is a separate area. Those three make sense. And then the other three areas should have been, you should have had, Din and Nefashos should have been a separate unit. Avodah Zarah should have been a separate unit. And the next, and the sixth unit should have been all of Isra Heter. That's not exactly, those parts don't correspond. Those three parts, the last three, don't correspond to the Shishi Sidri Mishnah. We have in the Mishnais, you have Zroim, Moed, and Noshim, are the first three units. The last three units we understand, Nezikin, Kachim, and Taris, these are three units of areas in Halacha that are separate. In the Midrash HaTorah and Rashi's Behem, that they're really separate. The first three really should have been blended in together, the Zroim with the Moed with the Noshim. It's all Isra Heter. Everything is Isra Heter. So if they would have divided it, Mishnayis are divided based on a different consideration. If they would have divided it according to our breakdown of the six Alpi Halacha, there are six areas in Halacha, we would have had all three would have been one unit. Zroim, Moed, Noshim would have been one unit. That's all Isra Heter. Then you would have a separate unit, a separate Seder Mishnayis for Avodah Zarah, because the Midrash HaTorah and the Rashi's Behem are different there. Then there would have been a separate area of Halacha, that's Din HaNefashos, would have been a separate unit. But as I say, that's not exactly so. Another very popular drasha, style of drasha that you have in the Talmud is the Hekish. There are different types of Hekish. And Hekish means this is compared to that. Lahakish in Hebrew means one thing A is compared to B. So in the Chumash, there are at least three different styles of Hekish. One is, it says in the beginning of Chumash Vayikra, when you bring a Korban Asham, many of the laws are identical with a Korban Chatos, and the Chumash says, Ki ka chatos ko asham, Torah achas lahem. The Chatos is the same as the Asham, has the same dinim. So that's Mamash HaHekesh. The Chumash says that A equals B, a Chatos is the same as an Asham. Ki ka chatos ko asham. And you have a few other psukim like that in the Chumash. That's not the usual, that's a Mamash HaHekesh. And the Tanoim will have debates, how a Chatos is not an Asham. There are slight differences. A Chatos has four zrikas on the four corners. And Asham only has two zrikas on the two corners. There are slight differences between a Chatos and Asham. Where you zarek, lemayla mechut ha-sikra, lemata mechut ha-sikra, the upper half of the mizbech, the lower half of the mizbech. There are differences, but the Pasuk seems like it says that with respect to all other dinim that are not mentioned explicitly in the Chumash, everything is exactly the same. So the Tanaim have a debate. Is it Taka exactly the same? Everything is exactly the same, except for the few differences that are mentioned explicitly. Or do you say that it's approximately the same? So there's a dispute in the Mishnayos, how far do you go? The more popular style of Hekish, the most popular style, there's the three types, roughly speaking, three types. The popular style of Hekish is a different kind. You'll have a Pasuk which mentions two things next to each other. For example, in the end of Parsha Shoftim, the Torah speaks of the din of Egla Rufa. If you find a murdered person in Eretz Yisrael, you don't know who was responsible for the murder, so you have to measure to the cities nearby, the nearest cities, and the city that's closest has to bring an Egla Rufa. So the Chumash says that the Kohanim from that city have to offer a prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kapalei Amcha Yisrael Asher Padis Hashem. Let God forgive the Jewish people for this terrible act of murder. So the Chumash describes the Kohanim, they were the people who were chosen. All of a sudden the Chumash has to describe who the Kohanim are. At the end of Chumash Dvarim, very strange. It says, they were the people who were chosen, L'shoreso Olivar Bishmo, to offer Karbonis in the Beis HaMikdash and to say Birchas Kohanim. So the Gemara says, aha, the Chumash mentions two dinim, one next to the other in the same pasuk. L'shoreso Levarach Bishma. So you see that there's a connection between the two. That's usually called a hekesh. That's the popular style of a hekesh. When you have a pasuk that mentions two dinim, one next to the other, so we assume that there must be a connection between the two. Or for example, in that same pasuk, it says, Val piyam yir kol riyah v'chol nega. The Kohanim are in charge of paskining over nega tzaras. And the Kohanim are also supposed to be appointed as members of a bezin, members of a Sanhedrin, whenever they're qualified, whenever it's a toss-up. If you have two people equally qualified, one is a kohen, one is not, so it's preferable to appoint the kohen as a member of the bezin, because the Kohanim and the Levim are in charge of paskining the dinim. That's the job of the Shevet Levi, to paskin all the shaylos. So the pasuk describes al pihem, based on the word of the Kohanim, yihyeh kol riv v'chol nega. All dinim mominis will be decided by the Kohanim, and all negoim, all negat saras issues will have to be paskened by the Kohen. So the Tanoim learn adinim from the fact that these two are written one next to the other. We assume that there is a relationship and a connection between the two. There's a hekesh between the two. Or, for example, the pasuk only says v'samachta v'chagecho and chumash in connection with sukkahs. It never says it in connection with Pesach, never says it in connection with Shavuos. But because the pasuk says, Sholosh pamim ha'shani rad kol zchurchas p'nei Hashem elokecha v'chag ha'matzos v'chag ha'shavuos v'chag ha'sukkahs, you should visit, the men should visit the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkahs. So Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkahs are mentioned next to each other in the Chumash, that's a hekesh. So it doesn't mean that you eat matzahs on Shavuos or that you eat blintzes on Pesach. It's a restricted hekesh, it's a partial hekesh. So part of what you learn out from the hekesh is that although the Chumash only records the mitzvah of Simcha in connection with the Sukkahs, we say that it applies to all the Shalosh Regolim. With respect to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that's a further debate among the Tanoim, because there's no Hekesh in this pasuk. Maybe there's another Hekesh somewhere else that should extend the mitzvah of Simcha even to Rosh Hashanah and to Yom Kippur. This is a common style of a Hekesh, where you have two dinim written in the same pasuk, one next to the other. We assume that there must be a good reason for it. Then there's a third kind of a Hekesh. Imagine if the Rebbeinu Shlom dictated a Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu, a pasuk to Moshe Rabbeinu that has two dinim written next to each other in the same pasuk, so we assume that there must be a reason. What if HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaim two dinim b'neshim achas? What if he said two dinim with the same breath, which is humanly impossible to say two things at the same time? So the Talmud had a tradition that the Aseres HaDibros, which appear twice in the Chumash, once in Yisrael, once in Boaz Chanan, have slight discrepancies between them. A major discrepancy is that in one version it says Shamar is Yama Shabbos L'Kadosh, the other one says Zohar. Shamar means not to do Malach. Shamar Shabbos means one who doesn't, it's a loises, one who doesn't do Malach. And Zohar is a mitzvah saseh, that's not a mitzvah loises. Zohar means you should recite Lahazakir. Zohar is Yama Shabbos L'Kadosh means Taskiru. You should mention the day of Shabbos to recite Kiddush on Shabbos. So the rabbis had a tradition that everything that was written on the Luchos Rishonis was exactly the same on the Luchos Shnias. That's what it says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu engraved on the second Luchos exactly word for word what was on the first Luchos. So how come you have a discrepancy? So the Gemara says that's not a discrepancy on the text that appeared. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaimed the Aseres HaDibros initially at Har Sinai, on the first Shavuos, he proclaimed both B'Nishim Achas. He said both at the same time. What was the significance of doing such a stunt, doing such a shtick, that he should proclaim both at the same time? So the Gemara says that's a hekesh. If a hekesh means you have two dinim written one next to each other in the pasuk, as the pasuk flows on and you assume that they must be connected, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaim both b'nishim achas, we can't do such a thing, we can't even listen, we can't even hear two different things that are being said at the same time. But the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said them at the same time was to teach us this hekesh, that despite the fact that kiddush should have been a mitzvah saseh shazman groma, that women are exempt from it, nonetheless the women are mechuyev to recite kiddush because there's a hekesh, and the women are obligated to observe shmirah Shabbos, because shmirah Shabbos is a lois saseh, that's an iser to be mechal Shabbos. When it comes to mitzvah lois saseh, even if it's a zman groma, the women are still obligated to observe it. So even though the mitzvah saseh of kiddush, women should have been exempt because it's a mitzvah seseh shazman groma, but nonetheless, this is a better hekesh than a normal hekesh. Not that you have two dinim that are adjacent to each other in one pasuk, two dinim that were proclaimed simultaneously, bevasachas, so that certainly has the status of a hekesh. And there's a big literature in the commentaries on the Gemara, how far does this hekesh go? Does it only make a connection between kiddush and malacha, or does it even include all the laws of Shabbos? That the women are obligated to observe all laws of Shabbos, that's a further discussion. Then the Talmud has a famous dispute, a machlokes among the Tanaim. What about smuchim? The Yudarshan Smuchim. Smuchim means you have two dinim that are written next to each other, but they're in two adjacent psukim. Not that the two dinim appear in the same pasuk, the two dinim appear in two psukim that are next to each other. The Tanoim have this dispute regarding all of Chumash, whether Yudarshan Smuchim or not, but the Talmud says the one place where for sure Yudarshan Smuchim is Chumash Dvarim. In Mishnah Torah, that's Chumash Dvarim, is certainly Darshan Smuchim. We have many, many halachas, you'd really be surprised, many, many halachas, very famous fundamental halachas that are based on Smuchim and Chumash Dvarim. For example, how do you determine who is a mamzer? So that based on a psukim, the pasuk lo yava mamzer bekal Hashem is written in the middle of nowhere. One would have thought it would be written together with the prohibited marriages. No. It is, but it's not written where you would have thought it would have been written. It's written right next to one of the prohibited marriages, and it's unclear who that marriage is. It says that a man is not allowed to marry, I forgot the expression in the pasuk. Lo yigala knaf aviv. A man is not allowed to marry knaf aviv. What does that mean? So there's a dispute among the Tanoim what that phrase in the pasuk means. So one Tana says it means your stepmother. One is not permitted to live with his stepmother. That's an Issa Kares. So the fact that the pasuk of Mamzer is written next to that determines that only a child is only a Mamzer if he's born from a prohibited marriage that has Kares. Rabbi Akiva says no, that pasuk, Lo Yigala Knaf Aviv, is speaking about Shemeres Yavim Shalaviv, a different case. My uncle died and he left no children. And my father is supposed to do either Yibum or Chalitza. My father didn't get a chance to do it yet. And then I live with that woman. So that case would only be an Isalav. So in such a case where it's only an Isalav, Rebbe Kiva thinks in that case there's only an Isalav. So in such a case, still the child will be a mamzer. So the famous dispute among the Tanoim, the different opinions, there are quite a few different opinions, around five or six different opinions. How do you determine when the child is a mamzer? Halacha l'maaseh, there's only one psak in Shulchan Aruch, but among the Tanoim, in the period of the Tanoim, there were five or six different opinions among the Tanoim. So everything revolves about this smuchim, the two psukim in the middle of Chumash Dvarim, where the pasuk of mamzer is written next to a pasuk of lo yigala knaf aviv. Or take for example the din in the Talmud that a woman cannot write a sefer Torah, a woman cannot write a mezuzah. That's based on the two psukim in Kriyashma that are adjacent to each other. The pasuk says, "Ukshartem liyos al yodecho," all the men should put on tefillin. Then it says, "Uchsavtom al mezuzas beisecho b'sherecho," you should write the mezuzas. So it says the same person who is obligated to wear tefillin, not a katan before bar mitzvah, not a non-Jew, and not a woman, all these people are exempt from hanochas tefillin. The same person who is obligated to put on tefillin is kosher for ksiva sefer Torah. Or, for example, we have a principle in the Talmud: mitzvah sese doicha mitzvah loy sese. Whenever there's a conflict in you have a dilemma: either you'll fulfill a mitzvah sese, but you will violate by fulfilling the mitzvah, you'll violate an aver, or if you'll abstain from doing aver, you will just lose the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. So there is a rule that sometimes applies, doesn't always apply. There are a lot of rules and regulations. There is, in principle, there is a rule. Mitzvah sase is deicha mitzvah slay sase. That's based on the smuchim, the two psukim that are next to each other. In Chumash Dvar, it says that you have to put on tzitzis on your garments. And the very next pasuk says that you're not allowed to wear shatnas. So why are these two psukim adjacent to each other? So the rabbis understood, under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to wear shatnas. However, if it's a case of tzitzis, if you have, let's say, a linen garment, and you want to put in tzitzis, and the tchelis thread has to be a certain color blue, and also has to be wool. The string that's dyed blue, the tchelis string, has to be made from wool. It can't be made from any other thread. The Gemara learns that from psukim. So even though the garment is made from linen, and by tying on the tchelis you're going to create shatnas, nonetheless, that's permissible. That's the mocker, that's the source of the principle that mitzvah sase decha mitzvah sloy sase. So these are several, these are three, the definition of mamzer, and the halacha that who can write a sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah, and the principle of mitzvah sase decha mitzvah sloy sase. There are many, many more, many, many halachas that are based on, surprising, students in yeshiva never think about it, many, many halachas based on smuchim in Chumash Dvarim, in Mishnah Torah. And the rest of Chumash, it's a dispute among the Tanoim, whether they darshan smuchim or not. Do you necessarily assume that just like two dinim in the same pasuk have to be connected, that's a hekesh. If the Torah writes two dinim in the same pasuk, they must be related to each other. Similarly, if the Torah writes two psukim next to each other, which are regarding two different mitzvahs, the usim, they also must be connected. That's a dispute. Take, for example, one of the cases which the Talmud discusses is, we have a din, but we're not sure whether this is a biblical din or a rabbinical din. A kohen who drank wine or drank schnapps is not permitted to duchen. That's by Simchas Torah. If the kohanim have a drink, so they're not allowed to duchen by Musaf. So the Gemara at one point suggests that this is based on smuchim, but it's not in Dvarim. It's in Parshas Naso. That Yivrecha Hashem Yishmerecha, Yor Hashem Ponem Velecha Vichuneko, the Birchas Kohanim is written right next to the Parsha of Nazir. One next to the other. So the Nazir is not allowed to drink wine, so some Chachamim think, oh, that's the source for this principle. Just like the Nazir is not allowed to drink wine, so too, the kohen who wants the duchen is not allowed to drink wine. And many commentaries on the Gemara say that that can only be midirabbanan, because in the rest of the Chumash, outside of Chumash Dvarim, it's not generally accepted that we paskin that you darshan smuchim. In Chumash Dvarim, we darshan smuchim. The rest of the Chumash, we don't. I'll take, for example, there's another famous topic. On Yontif, we're not permitted to do malacha, same as Shabbos, but not the same as Shabbos. Whatever is malacha, sechel nefesh, you're allowed to do. You're allowed to cook food on Yontif. You're allowed to carry things that are necessary. So you're allowed to do things for the purpose of eating food. So you want to go fishing? So you're allowed to go fishing. So that says in the Gemara, Mishnah, you're not allowed to go fishing on Yontif. You want to have fresh fruit, so you want to pluck off the fruits from the tree on Yontif. So the Mishnah says you're not allowed to pluck off the fruits, even if the fruits fell down by themselves, you're not allowed to eat them, because you may forget and pluck off the fruits. So you're not allowed to squeeze out oranges or lemons on Yontif, even though it's mamash echel nefesh. He wants to have some lemon juice in his tea. The Talmud says you're not allowed to, and even if the juice does that by itself, you're also not allowed to drink the juice, to make sure that you don't forget and squeeze out the juice. How did you come up with that idea? If you're allowed to do echel nefesh, you're allowed to cook, and you're allowed to shecht, so why can't you go fishing? So the Talmud Yerushalmi, this already doesn't appear in the Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, because in Parshas Bo, the two psukim that are adjacent, where it says, Ashmartem es ha-matzos. When you bake the matzos, you have to have shmura matzah for Pesach. When does the din of shmura matzah begin? Mishas lisha. Only when you mix the dough, or when you mix the flour with water. There's a dispute. We are machma, we insist on having shmura mishas ketzira. We insist of having people watch the grain from the time that it was harvested from the ground, time that it's detached from the ground. They put it in special sacks to make sure that it doesn't rain on it. But that's not the... That's a chumrah. That's, it costs a lot more money to buy the shmura matzah. That's a chumrah. Most are of the opinion that it's sufficient with shmura mishas lisha, which all the matzahs are. As long as you watched it from the time that you mixed the flour with water, that you didn't let it sit for too long, that it didn't become chametz. So one suggestion in the Talmud Yerushalmi is that since these psukim are one next to the other in Parshas Bo, it says, Ushmartem es ha-matzos, shmura matzah, and the law of shmura matzah begins mishas lisha v'yelach. That pasuk is written right next to the pasuk of Acha sheyachol chol nefesh, hu levado yaseh lachem. That whatever is for the purpose of oichal nefesh, malacha for the purpose of oichal nefesh, you're allowed to do. To shecht a bit chicken on yontif, could be that today, not a lot of shecht chickens, because today we have freezers, when we're interested in eating chickens, we don't shecht the chickens. It could be that now everything is different. But in the days of the Talmud, until they had refrigerators, it was permitted, until 100 years ago for sure, it was permissible to shecht the chickens on yontif. You can cook the food on yontif, you can bake on yontif, and so on.
Can't squeeze lemons.
Can't squeeze lemons. That says in the Gemara. Can't squeeze lemons, yeah. On Yontif. And even if it's squeezed out by itself, the Gemara says you're not allowed to drink the juice. Yeah. So one suggestion, the Talmud Yerushalmi is, because the Pasuk, Acha Shiachol Echol Nefesh, Hu Levad Yosel Lechem, the Heter Echol Nefesh, is written right next to the Pasuk of Shmura Matzah, and Shmura Matzah is Milisha V'Yelech, so to Echol Nefesh is only Milisha V'Yelech. Whatever precedes Lisha, like grinding the grain in order to make flour out of it, also not permissible. You're not allowed to grind on Yontif to make flour. Some things are allowed to grind, some things are not allowed to grind. There's a whole discussion in the Mishnayos. And in Shulchan Aruch, of course, there's a lot. So that's a questionable drasha, because that's a smuchim outside, that's in Shmos, that's not in Chumash Dvar. So that's a big question, whether that's a legitimate drasha or not. Let me bring to your attention, the Talmud has very often a comment, Al tikri kach elakach. Don't read the pasuk like that, you read it like this. In the davening on Shabbos morning, Al tikri banayach elabonayach. There's another drasha there, I forgot. So what do you mean? Don't read the pasuk like this, read it like this. It says Vishinantam Levanecha. So the Chacham says, Altikri Vishinantam Ela Vishilashtam. How do you say, don't read it like that, read it like that? Totally different. Altikri Maki Nefesh Behema Yishalmena. Altikri Yishalmena Ela Yashlimena. What do you mean? But it doesn't say Yashlimena. So there's an entire book, very fascinating book, by a very big Talmid Chacham. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach gave a haskama to this sefer. He knew the author personally. The author must have passed away 70 years ago in Yerushalayim, a big Talmid Chacham. I didn't know him, and his name was Menachem Mordechai Frankel Taimin. And the name of the book is Ki Eim Labino Tikra, and he has a comment on every time that the Talmud says, Al Tikri Kach Alakach. What is it all about? And if you read his introduction, he tells you what the gist of the book is. That it doesn't mean that you read the words differently from the way they appear in the Tanakh. It just means you interpret it differently. And he quotes all the commentaries on the Gemara say that this is so. Very interesting. If people have time, they should read the whole book. But I would recommend, if you have time, to read the introduction. The one who published is Aviezer Cohen, who's your friendly real estate agent in Brooklyn. He gives a shiur in Daf Yomi Sama. He was a classmate of mine, and this was a grandfather of his. The author's name is Frankel Taumim. Menachem Mordechai Frankel Taumim. Frankel Taumim, yeah. Ke'em Labina Tikra. Very, if you read the introduction, he has the whole story there, what he's going to prove, what he's going to demonstrate in the rest of the book. I see my time is out. I have another hour, I was told. Rabbi Tversky won't be able to make it today, but I have to run to a bris. I have to run to a bris in New Jersey. Okay, we have not, no one should think that we finished. We didn't finish the lecture today, and we didn't finish for sure, we didn't finish the whole topic of the development of the Torah Shemalpeh, and believe that we will continue sometime in the future. Okay.